We did the same with the G110 V2.
Right.
We had a 220 volt version of that tool.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was made in the same factory as the G110. We get people asking all the time, well, does the G220 have more power? No, for 220 volt use.
Okay.
In Europe and stuff like that.
So it wasn't that stupid of a question.
No.
All right, we'll get started. And
fellow auto detailers, welcome to the show that features interviews with today's most successful auto detailers. This is the Auto Detailing Podcast. Here's your host, Jimbo Balaam.
Auto Detailing Podcast listeners, are you thinking about starting your very own mobile auto detailing business, but don't know where to start, confused with all the information that you're getting online? I wish I had a resource like this when I first started my business way back when. I've created the Mobile Auto Detailing Academy, a bulletproof way to start up and grow your business and start making money. We leave all the confusion out of it and just give you the facts and what you need to grow and succeed in your very own mobile auto detailing business. Head on over to mobileautodetailingacademy.com. That's mobileautodetailingacademy.com and get started today.
A refill. He's got coffee. He's got water. This guy's gonna be running in the bathroom every 5 minutes,
just like last time.
Seriously?
No. Every 10.
Hey, we actually did take a bathroom break.
That one went long. This one we'll try and keep within the time constraints. So, all right. Well, welcome to another episode of the Auto Detailing Podcast. I'm here at McGuire's headquarters again in the training facility. Now, I got confused because I came in from a different door, so I thought it was maybe a different training room, but I noticed it's the same one from last time.
Yes.
Same one.
Oh, you mean last podcast? Or last
well, last time, room? I think you guys brought me down that door.
Oh, okay, yeah, there's different.
Whatever. Different we access
have,
ways.
We have, it's a sneaky building.
Yes.
We brought you down the dark stairwell out back last time, I think.
Depending on how this podcast goes, there's another door we might take you through.
Oh, perfect. The ball opens up. So, we've had Jason Rose on the show before. And Michael Stoops, but we brought in Mike Pennington, too. So
hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for sliding me the note of your
there
name.
There you
I
go.
When I went to the bathroom, I was practicing, like, whoa, okay, Mike. Is it Michael now or Mike? But
it's, only if I'm in trouble, it's Michael, typically.
So today we're going to talk about the new machine, the MT300, and the three new pads that you guys released. And just people are starting to get their hands on them. I'm starting to see everyone on Facebook talk about it. Different distributors have it in, so I'm excited to talk about it, what it can do, what it does, how guys can make money, more money with this machine, which is kind of a topic I want to talk about later too that I didn't pre-warn you about, but how can this machine help guys to make increased profits in their own detailing business.
Well, hopefully you're hearing good things.
I haven't heard anything. Other than they got it. Just kidding.
Well,
I saw when you guys went to Texas, I saw what you used the MT300 on that car, right?
Yeah.
The Duesenberg?
Yes, we did.
So I think it would be hard to argue and say that it didn't work on that car because it looks like it did.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenally on that car.
I would go so far as to say that, and I don't like to speak for other people, but I think the guys that were there, they were all saying it was their favorite tool to use on that particular vehicle
right.
that day. I
mean, right.
We showed up the morning of the second day. And we had, three MT300s on hand.
Mm-hmm.
We had five people total working on the car. Well, Lisa was doing a lot of the interior work with little smaller air tools and whatnot. But Jason and I turned around, and the MT300s were the first tools taken off the table. We kind of wanted
everyone.
That's good. No, that's a good problem to have. We like that.
And then we left. You know, so Mike and I left, and they stayed there to work on some other cars. And the next thing they say is, you know, not that they missed us being gone.
Right, they missed the tool.
The tool, right.
Yeah. We missed the tool.
Yeah, Nick Chapman, who actually was he's the guy that's taking care of and prepping the higher-end vehicles from the Andrews collection, actually, that we're talking about here. Yeah, he's the one that posted that on Facebook the day after we left, that, oh, we're pulling the next Duesenberg in and really missed that MT300. Jason
no
and I
mention,
were like, wow,
yeah.
Great.
Wow, great.
Wait,
thanks,
we know
guys.
What the love is here, huh?
So let's get into kind of the genesis of the machine. Why was it developed, I guess? What did McGuire see that was, I guess I have a little bit of knowledge on it from SEMA and what you guys told us at SEMA, but for someone who doesn't know or wasn't in that room, what is kind of the thought behind it? Why was it developed?
Can I talk? Can we fight over this?
We're really going to be fighting for words today.
So McGuire's actually has a long history with DA application in general, and we go back decades, you know, actually experimenting and developing products and pads and tools for DA application. So this particular tool, the MT300, is just it's consistent with our long heritage of continual improvement in the DA application area. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, not to bore everybody with all the history, but if you look at every step that McGuire's has taken over the years in pads and tools and all that, you will see a progression of continual improvement in performance in DA application. And this is just one more step in that direction, right, guys?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think it also, to kind of dovetail into that, there's been kind of a wide gap between both price and performance on the more, let's call it enthusiast or consumer side of DA polishing tools and the more high-end professional range, right? So I think the biggest gap really was price.
Right.
You had this whole group of tools that were around $150 or so. And if you wanted to jump up in performance to anything significant, you were asked to jump up to almost a $400 price point. You could go cheaper if you went rotary.
Right.
Right. All kinds of rotaries available at $220. But that's a whole different skill set. There's a whole different learning curve involved there. So we kind of looked at that big gap and thought, well, what if we look into ways we might be able to fill that a little bit, both from a pricing and a performance perspective?
Yeah, that's a good point, because for a guy maybe just starting out, and you guys know how it is, you can get caught up in these forums and Facebook groups, and you feel like since you don't have the Cadillac of the DA machine, you're not a professional detailer, you know, but if you're just starting out, to make that jump to a $400 machine, that's quite a commitment.
It is.
You know, and that could be a big deterrent for some guys, because they're like, whoa, is my business going to make it? Is it not going to make it? Do I really want to spend $400 on one machine? Mm-hmm. You know? Mike, is there something you want to add to that?
It's interesting, because on top of all that, and all great points, is, you know, the consumer, whether they were an enthusiast or a shop, you know, always gave us feedback on, hey, that's a great tool. Your G110 V2 is a fantastic tool, but what if it had this, or what if it had that? So we're always collecting that kind of data, to incorporate, and the timing was just right to kind of merge technology that we knew about, information from users, and the MT300 was born. You know, after many, many, many months / years of development.
So let's talk about the machine compared to the G110 V2. Mm-hmm. What you talked about, the progression and the upgrades that you guys are constantly trying to make a better DA machine. So how is this one better than the previous?
Well, the two most notable that came to mind quickly when you asked that, one is the actual shape of it.
Right.
More ergonomic, easier to hold in your hands, you know. So that was a definite
step. I like the handle. Kind of makes it a little distinctive. Not that the D handle is rare, but it kind of makes it, you know, like the Porter cable or whatever always has the one handle off the side that I always usually took off. But I like that.
Yeah.
Kind of the D handle on there.
Well, what the D handle does for you is it gets your downward pressure right over the shaft. So if you have a side handle, then your pressure tends to be one-sided.
Okay.
Unless you're training your arms to compensate.
Right.
So, I mean, that's one thing, the shape of it, making it more ergonomic, easier to hold and all that. The other thing that comes to mind is, the power behind the tool. Mm. So the G110 V2 had this thing we called cruise control, and it was our first foray into, how can we have some robust assistance behind pad rotations? Because we have come to the conclusion, we learned that pad rotations with a DA tool that's where it's at.
Okay. You know,
that good rotations under pressure translates into better defect removal performance, right? So the G110 V2 had that cruise control, and it's, you know, internal circuitry that kind of senses that load on the tool, and it tries to kick in some more power. The big improvement on the MT300 is we went from an analog system, on the G110 V2, which basically does sense load, and then it kind of applies math, and it says, okay, the load is this, let's apply that.
Okay.
You know, and then it kind of boosted power, which you can actually feel on that tool. Mm-hmm. You know, you can put some pressure down on setting 3, and you can actually feel it.
And it kicks up.
But the improvement on the MT300 is a next step forward in technology on that, and it's digital, and it's more real time, and it's more of a feedback loop.
Okay.
So it will sense pressure, it will kick in amps accordingly, and then it will continue to, and then you back off, and it'll back off with you. You push down, it'll go with you. So it's actually more responsive and more robust. So we called it the digital torque management system, which I guess Mr. Stoops here was contributing that name. Yeah?
Bravo.
And your royalty checks are coming to your house, right?
and they're all getting donated to charity.
So.
Poor charity's not getting anything, are they?
So do you want to talk about that? The digital, what was it? Digital torque management.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Jason pretty well just summed it up. Okay. It's, you know, it's not uncommon that when someone's working with a dual action polisher that they start to put some fairly significant pressure down on the tool. Unfortunately, I think more people do that more often than they really need to. But as you start to put pressure down on a dual action polisher, because you've got that free rotating spindle, right? It's not a direct drive tool like a rotary is. Mm-hmm. You can start to put some drag on that can slow down that rotation.
Right.
That's such a drag.
But that's good.
That was good. Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't that good. Let's not encourage him.
Bravo. Yeah. Bravo. Golf clap.
Yes. But what the digital torque management works to overcome is that pressure that causes that the loss of pad rotation. And as we all know, if you're looking to get defects out, you need pad rotation,
right?
Speed alone, right? If you've got a tool, this will run up to 7,500 RPMs. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know that personally, I haven't run it over 5,800 for any length of time because I haven't had to.
Right.
I don't know. Probably the same with you, Jason. We've been working with this tool together.
Just in testing, but no, I haven't found an actual need on a car to run it that high.
So speed in and of itself isn't really what's going to get the job done.
Right.
For you, right. If that was the case, everybody would be making 20,000 RPM. Heck, you grab a Dremel and there you go, right? 40,000 RPM.
And we've talked about that a lot, or I've heard it on other podcasts that, you know, just increasing speed, you're mainly just increasing noise, not really much else.
Well, you could actually be increasing pad speed, but the real kicker here is under load.
Right.
That's all we really care about is when the pad hits the paint, what happens then? That's what we care about.
Okay.
So as Mike was saying, you can have tools that have all kinds of high-end top speed to it, but as soon as you put it under load, the question is, does the pad stall or does it power through? That's the big, the big question mark.
Right.
Yeah, and if that pad stalls, who cares what the speed is?
Right, really? It doesn't matter.
It could be 40,000.
It could be 40,000 RPM, but if you put pressure down on it and it stops,
it's
you're
useless.
Dead in the water.
Right.
Big deal.
Right. Mike, was there something you wanted to add?
Well, just kind of, it's funny. This is all a great conversation. It, you know, we equate it a lot of times to, you know, a car that has a lot of horsepower. You know, if you can't translate that horsepower to the ground and utilize that in a drag strip situation, you know, so there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that makes that car fast or makes the MT300 a very effective, not only finishing tool, but defect removal. You got to look at more than just one thing by itself.
Okay.
You know, DTM is probably the biggest part of that, as what Jason and Mike were talking about. But it's interesting as you start peeling these, you know, layers of these onion back on machinery and what's actually happening, and you get to the bottom of it. You know, sometimes a little bit different story than what people have heard or read in places.
So, is this the first machine with the digital torque management system?
I don't know for sure,
to
be honest with you, but I think all DA tools have some sort of
versus the analog. Because you talked about the analog and then the digital kind of being the future of it.
Yeah, I think they all have some way of powering through rotations, but what they are, I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, that's a question for an engineer and, you know, it's over my pay grade.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot more to it than just, you know, like Jason was talking, it's not just analog or digital.
Okay.
There's some other factors that are built into the componentry and
yeah.
Okay.
other things. So it's, you know, some of that may be a little proprietary for us, but
yeah.
it's tough to speak for everybody. Yeah.
Okay, okay. I was just going to say, let's get into that. But then you said you can't really talk about it. So what are other, we're getting out into murky water where I'm not, you know, I'm kind of getting over my pay grade too. But
we are perfectly fine with you asking any question you want to ask.
I really want to talk about the cord.
As long as you understand, we won't necessarily answer them all.
I want to talk about the cord, Mike. Can you tell me about the cord?
Have I got some information for you that Jason is going to share about that cord?
And no one listening will get that. But before we started recording, we were talking about the cord, and they were worried I was going to ask some question about the cord that I can't even remember the question. But
16 gauge.
Okay, oh, perfect. Yeah. So what? We have the pad sitting here too. So let's go through the pad. So were the pads developed alongside the machine? Was the machine developed first, and then the pads? The pad. You know, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well,
and anyone can answer.
The DA foam discs were actually part of a larger project where McGuire's kind of revamped all of our pad lines.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right. It was synchronized with the tool project. So the tool was validated with those foam discs, and the foam discs were validated
okay.
with the tool. So, yeah, they were kind of ground up, built together.
Yeah, and I think integral to all of that, when you look at what happens in your hands when you're using a DA tool, right? And the motion that it puts the pad through, that kind of ellipse motion, we've all mm-hmm. seen little drawings and whatnot, it's not a circular pattern. It's actually a fairly violent motion when you mm-hmm. when you think about how the pad and the backing plate interface together and the way that pad's moved. We have, with the MT300, we have a single-piece billet steel counterweight.
Okay.
And you think about, what's a counterweight do in a DA polisher? It's countering the weight, the movement of that pad and the backing plate,
mm-hmm.
and it's there to help smooth out that whole process. I remember years ago people talking about, you know, when everybody that was using a DA practically was using a Porter cable, right?
Right.
And they were talking about, do you use the counterweight for the 5-inch or do you use the counterweight for the 6-inch? And people talking about swapping those things out, and I don't know, I can't feel the difference. Can you, Bob? Well, gee, I don't know. I'm using the 5 with the 6, the 6 with the 5, and I can't, right? Well, if they're off, they're off. If that counterweight isn't really designed to counter the weight of something specific, then it's all random, and there's going to be some countering of that motion, but how smooth is it really going to be? And when you're buying this Porter cable back 8, 9, 10 years ago, and you've got all these different pads and backing plates, there can't be anything that's really matching up together because nothing was designed to match up together. So this single-piece billet steel counterweight
mm-hmm.
matched to the weight of our backing plate and these new thin foam discs, you put those together, they're counteracting each other to create a very smooth operation
okay.
of the tool instead of a real violent high vibration.
Right.
And I think you put this tool side by side with some other DAs on the market, and it is tremendously smoother than a lot of the DAs on the market. It's a great user experience from that perspective alone. Real ergonomic to hold because the body diameter of the tool is a little
mm-hmm.
bit smaller. So if you've got
okay, right.
smaller hands, it's easier for you. If you've got bigger hands, you can just grab a hold of the thing. But it's very, very smooth in operation. It's incredibly well balanced. So it's actually kind of a joy to use the thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And other than the user experience, does the smoothness of the machine along the car help with defect removal? Or is it mainly just a user experience kind of deal?
Well, I think you can almost kind of yes and no that. I mean, just because it's smoother, does it help with defect removal? You might be able to argue that one, but if
okay.
it's smoother and you're more comfortable and you can more easily control that tool, because let's face it, you know, technique
it's bouncing
is,
on the
yeah,
car,
technique
yeah.
is critical with,
right.
with a DA, right? And that's part of the beauty of a DA as opposed to a rotary. You use a rotary wrong,
right.
and you get another guy at the body shop because he's going to be repainting
right.
the panels you've burned through.
Yeah.
Use a DA wrong, and you just don't get results for the most part.
Right.
You're not keeping the pad flat. And if you're fighting with a tool because it's not comfortable to use and you're fatiguing
right.
over time because
yeah.
the tool's not comfortable to use, are you then going to start losing defect removal? Yeah,
good
I think
point.
You probably will.
Good point. And I like that you guys came out with pads with the machine, because like you, and you were talking about the counterweight and stuff like that, and I think for guys, you know, if they can use a product or products that are meant to be in sync with each other, then they're going to be able to obtain greater results mm-hmm. quicker or more desirable results, maybe not faster or quicker, but the user experience, like you said, the user experience will be more enjoyable if they don't have to, well, what pad should I use with it? Which pad will help me get the best results with it? It's like you guys kind of have laid it out for them.
Yeah.
You know, with the different pads.
Yeah, and if you look back even through our history, you know, systems have been uber important mm-hmm. to, you know, our company now and what it was, you know, when Barry's grandfather was, you know, doing clinics and car shows, that stick to those systems because you get the best results. And for a professional, mm-hmm. that's all about time.
Yeah.
And time equals money. So if you start putting all that together on top of all that, you know, then you start looking, hey, that's directly affecting my pocket right now in
right.
a good way.
Right.
So
right.
systems are always are, you know, we preach that.
And that's what's so frustrating for me and kind of part of the vision behind this podcast is just letting guys know good products and good systems, because the product range out there is so vast and yeah. it's so easy to dump some serious money
and get caught up in
and just get caught up in all this hype, and then you're getting products and they're not working how everyone said that they were supposed to work. And me personally, for my business, I like that if I could just have one system.
Yeah.
And it just works really well. And I'm a big fan of playing with a little bit of everything, but I think it's important, like you said, time is money. You need to have your go-to.
Right.
You know, and that works the majority of the time on a vast variety of different paints and finishes and stuff like that.
You know, and that kind of opens up another topic of, you know, the technician themselves and how good are they from an experience, because it's probably fair. I mean, you guys chime in. You'll never get a system that works 100% of the time
right.
on every car and every humidity and everything. So a lot of the systems work fantastic a lot of the times. But as a technician or an operator, that's where your experience and understanding and training begins to manipulate, mm-hmm. adjust yeah. within that system.
Right.
And that makes that system work 100% of the time.
Right.
And raises your success rate. So there's nothing wrong with, you know, experimenting with other products, but a lot of times people need to look inward.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of adjusting to a different product for a situation, a lot of times it's just adjusting your own technique mm-hmm. to adapt and make that system that you're comfortable with work
right.
a little bit better. Again, I hate to go back to the driver category and racing, but drivers always adjust their line, adjust their driving mm-hmm. style.
Mm-hmm.
Got the same car, and they make slight adjustments, but
right.
they have to adjust their style and make that car perform
and what
even
that
better.
Reminds me of, Mike, is some of these shops you go into and the guy opens their cabinet and they have this cafeteria style of, you know, I got a sample of this, I got XYZ compound, I got ABC polish, mm-hmm. and they know exactly, I use this one on white cars, I use that one on black cars, I use this one on Tuesday and that one on Saturday, which is great for that guy, but how duplicatable is that? If you take on an employee...
Right. Right.
You know, then your knowledge is very difficult to translate to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So best advice I heard at a training class was just pick a system,
yeah.
learn it well, and to Mike's point, you know, make the adjustments to the paint and to the customer
mm-hmm.
and stick with a system, whether it's Meguiar's or somebody else, but stick with something that you have confidence in, that you know works for you. And then don't get distracted by every, you know, whatever.
Bright, shiny object that comes out.
Squirrel! Squirrel!
Right. So let's talk about why it's kind of funny. I look at these pads and then I look at the older foam pads that are significantly thicker.
Thicker, yeah.
And it's like, you kind of look at the thick ones like, why would I ever use that? It just seems like so much foam to me. But why... I think you guys are the first in the industry to go down to this thin of a pad. Is that right?
I don't think we're the first.
Okay.
Giving credit where credit's due, I believe Lake Country launched a disposable pad system that was really thin.
Okay.
I think it kind of, you know, came on the market, and I haven't seen so much of it lately. But if you had to give credit where it's due, I think they launched a super thin you know, they had a kind of a backing plate that was designed for that thin pad, and it would be disposable, basically.
Okay.
But I think mainstream, I think we're the first to go after this particular thickness and diameter and shape.
Yeah, the,
it's pretty darn thin.
Yeah, what and what is the, I don't even know what, not a gap, but the back of the pad that sits on the backing plate compared to the front of the pad is a little bit, I'm describing that really bad, but a little bit different.
Yeah, so you're talking about diameter?
Yeah, okay. So why?
Yeah, the purpose of that, just so you know, and your listeners can't see what we're pointing to. So you all see this
and,
right now.
And I did a horrible job describing it, too. I'm like, you know, this part right here?
Well, the pad's designed in such a way that the outer diameter is...
well said.
A quarter of an inch larger than the inner diameter, which is the part that attaches to the backing plate. The purpose mainly for that is safety. So if you're accidentally bump this pad up against a part of a car like antenna post or a mirror housing or door handle, something like that, that you're not making contact with a hard backing plate on that surface. So it's really a bumper, you know.
Okay.
And we wanted to have the least amount of bumper possible to provide safety.
Okay.
Because the bigger that distance is, if you can imagine having a half an inch or mm-hmm. 3/4 of an inch beyond the backing plate, it ends up impacting performance.
Okay. So,
yeah, that's a good question, actually. Why do we have that? Because there is discussion on some of these detail forums about, you know, what Kevin Brown calls the exact fit scenario, where the backing plate and the pad are exact diameters. Mm-hmm. And you got to really have, you know what you're doing to operate a pad like that so that you aren't bumping up any parts or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are other main points about the machine or the pads that you guys want to make sure we cover?
I think I want to add on to what Mike was talking about, that billet counterweight there. Huh. You know, smoothness is really important, but, you know, if you look at some of the other tools on the market, including our G110 V2, that counterweight was multiple pieces that were bolted together. So that just became a possible point of failure in extreme cases.
Interesting.
So we decided to not only from a balance perspective, but also this is a one piece, so you kind of gain a durability scenario for those extreme professionals where, you know, we have some cases where these, you know, DAs may be running two shifts, 16-hour shifts a day, and they're just constantly going. So we wanted to minimize that scenario at the same time, because in some cases we've seen that.
Okay.
You know.
Well, another thing can happen, and you probably have experience with some of these older dual action polishers. Over time, they end up sounding different and feeling different, you know, and that's just basically that counterweight assembly is starting to work itself away from its own parts. So
if
you can imagine three or four parts that are screwed together.
Right. It's inevitably going to start to work its way loose.
And then, I mean, Mike Stoop said it great, that the DAA action is, at the microscopic level, it's a pretty violent action. I personally would not want to be a DAA foam pad, a DAA foam pad that was put through.
But if you were, you'd be ours, right?
Yeah. Yes, if I was, I'd be a McGuire.
It's like a Barbara Walters question. If you could be a DAA foam pad, which one would you be?
Yeah. I want to be a McGuire.
I would not want to be a foam pad. But what Pennington, Mike Pennington, saying is this one piece counterweight is designed to kind of curb that whole potential for more sound, more vibration, you know, less performance over time, because there isn't anything about it to work itself loose. Mm-hmm. It's all one piece.
Okay.
So it's again our effort to try and go after durability. We wanted good vibration and sound experience, you know, for, I guess that doesn't sound right. We want a good sound experience for our users.
Yeah, but if you're working on the machine all day, like I was, this is totally a different off topic, but I was looking at like different steamers to wash cars waterlessly or whatever. And I was using one and it was so loud, not the machine itself, but from the trigger.
Yeah.
It was so loud. I was like, I couldn't imagine working with this all day. You would have to wear earplugs, or it would still be loud. So that brings up a good point with noise, that if you're going to be spending a lot of hours with a machine, you don't want it to really be super loud.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing about Meguiar's, I mean, not to toot our own horn here, but over decades with our liquid products, and a lot of people rave about, oh, Meguiar's stuff, it smells so good and has good textures and creams and colors. And so Meguiar's, for all its history, has been focused on the complete user experience.
Okay.
Anybody can make a compound
right.
and rip out a sanding mark or a scratch.
Right.
Anybody can do that.
Right.
But can you make a compound that delivers an overall user experience that's pleasant, less fatiguing, delivers a good finish?
Right.
You know, all the long laundry
right,
list.
Right, right.
So it's also with this tool, we're like, you know, can you make a DA tool that, you know, jiggles a pad around? Yeah, anybody can do that. Mm-hmm. But can we make one that feels good in your hands, that is not, like, to your point, doesn't sound like a train.
Right. Yeah, you just don't want to use it because you're like, gosh, it's so loud, and then my ears hurt. But kind of staying on that same line then of people just making something. You know, I'm going to have to dance here a little bit. But I've been seeing a lot of machines that just have, people are just putting their own label on it, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of those machines are bigger throw machines.
Uh-huh.
So what's the throw on this machine, and why this, why, you know, the current trend seems to be the bigger the throw, the better. Let's get like a 45 mil throw on a machine.
Yeah.
You know, but you guys stayed on the smaller throw.
Yeah. So I would be disappointed and surprised if you didn't go there on this podcast.
You know what? I saw it on your sheet because I was fishing for questions, and I'm like, let's talk about the throw. But then I remembered you guys brought
it up. That's like the pink elephant in the room, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the whole marketplace actually has been kind of mesmerized by this tall stroke mm-hmm. approach. And nothing bad to say about it tall. I mean, it's...
No, and I'm not trying to bash anyone. I'm just wondering why Meguiar's didn't. It seems like that's the trend.
Yeah, we could have done it.
Right.
Why didn't we? So,
right.
I mean, it's a very fair question given the current situation, which is everybody, like you said, is, oh my gosh, tall stroke, that's where it's at on defect removal. But there's probably several reasons why we didn't go there. The main one is that tall stroke, although it does deliver a faster and deeper rate of defect removal, all other things being the same, it does have some things that it doesn't do well, okay? And even, you know, the tall stroke users of today, if you ask them these questions, they'll tell you. It removes defects very well, and it did better than other DA tools prior to mm-hmm. that introduction. So credit where credit's due,
yeah.
Tall stroke raised the bar on defect removal mm-hmm. for the DA category. It absolutely did, and we're not taking anything
right.
away from that. However, tall stroke, by design, the fact that it has a tall orbit, there's some things that it just doesn't do as well as a standard or a lower or a smaller orbit will do. For example, on contours and curves,
mm-hmm.
Tall stroke has a tendency to stall on the pad rotation.
Okay, interesting.
So you actually need, you know, more speed or more or less pressure or something to power through on contours and curves. Another thing is because of that tall orbit, if you're working in an area that's tight and up against another body part,
okay,
like, you know, you imagine some of the bumper covers are that
right.
way and mirror housings and mm-hmm. things like that. That tall stroke, if you're not careful, can actually bounce and hit parts of the car.
Especially if you don't have a pad with a bumper.
Yeah, uh-huh. If you don't have a bumper, you'll
got
be
it.
The backing plate in it.
Right.
Another thing is that given the tall orbit size, edge work around the outside of panels, the defect removal performance tends not to be as what it
okay.
would be if you were flat on a flat panel.
Okay.
Yeah. So edge work is a little bit. So,
right.
And it does take a little bit of a learning curve to learn how to use a tall stroke effectively. And most of the pros do that.
Right.
No problem. But we went with an 8 millimeter, which is the 5/16 orbit that the G110B2 had mm-hmm. and the tools we had prior to that. It's what's considered standard orbit in the DA polishing category.
Right.
So it's standard. It tends to be, if you looked at all the orbit sizes available, if you can just think about all the ones that you could have on a tool, what would be the best all-around performance? Again, McGuire's focusing on
the whole experience.
So if you had to take one tool and do every car with it the rest of your life, would it be a tall stroke tool?
Good point.
So you probably would pick an 8mm type tool that you can then get in all the areas on the car and not have that.
Might take you longer on flat panels.
Yeah, you might.
But where it takes you longer on a flat panel makes up in the harder to reach areas, the more curvy parts.
Yeah. But that's also where sometimes a system will come into play. If you've got a standard orbit, you can now take pads and liquids and really make...
Tune them.
Yeah, the MT300 much more aggressive. Or you can actually make it less aggressive. But, you know, again, kudos to the tall stroke machines for being on that aggressive side. But in some cases, you can't tune them down to be less aggressive.
Okay.
So, again, just catering to that word system.
Right, it
was a little bit bigger thought process of, and there was a lot of thought process that went into where do we want that stroke to fall, all things considered.
Well, in real-world application, I think, Jason, looking back in the Duesenberg that we worked on a couple of weeks ago with Nick back in Texas.
That didn't have didn't look like it had a straight panel on it.
Well, you
looked on the doors.
Well, yeah,
it was all round, like a basketball.
The doors, I mean, that was an enormous car. So going down the length of the doors, on the trunk lid, that thing, there were, and along the top of the hood, there there were some pretty big expanses of fairly flat panel, okay? But there were a lot of curves on that car, more so than you're going to find in any other Duesenberg because of the uniqueness of this car.
Or any other car that most of the people are going to be working on.
And we found even in areas where you needed a smaller pad, a tool that was tall stroke but for a small pad wasn't really workable in there. And that's why the guys were such a big fan of the MT300 there because, and we talked about the torque earlier, we talked about torque in relationship to speed, and now we're talking about this stroke length. And, you know, when you look at the different performance characteristics, performance parameters of a DA tool, you're looking at the power of the motor, you're looking at the length of the stroke, you're looking at the speed of the tool, and you're looking at torque. If you take away the torque, just as we said with the speed of the tool, that doesn't matter. If you take away torque, stroke length doesn't matter. Take away torque and just the power of the thing doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters without torque. And torque becomes so important that, even though this is an 8mm orbit, not a tall stroke or a tall orbit, it has all that torque behind it, so we're still speeding through the defects.
It's not like it's not as simple as some people think of it, you know. Oh, I got tall stroke, so that means defect removal, and you only have 8mm stroke. I'm really sorry you don't have defect removal. It isn't that way.
But I'm glad we got... Go ahead.
Mike Pennington said it perfectly earlier on, that there's so many pieces that go into the puzzle.
Right.
You can't just concentrate on the one.
Right.
Right? I mean, we see that when people start talking about, oh, what's the PPI of your pad? We can show you two pads with the exact same PPI spec. Everything else is completely different, and those pads perform night and day different, but the PPI spec is the same.
Right.
PPI is pores per inch.
So why are they so different? Because everything else is so dramatically different, right?
Right. I'm glad we brought that up, because the last thing I want a guy or a detailer to think is that because he doesn't have a tall stroke machine that he is in some way inferior to someone that has a tall stroke machine.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. And another thing, frankly, is just a purely business perspective on McGuire's part. So why 8mm? Well, we didn't want to position our tool for just the high-end professional guy that's willing to pay $400 for you know, a nice premium tool. We wanted to go after a broader audience, so which included the whole range of professionals, like entry-level professionals, professionals working at different facilities like car wash and detail, at body shop. You know, we wanted a broad audience for this tool. And, you know, the question becomes, can you reach that audience with a tall stroke? We've made a decision 8mm was the way to go to reach that broader audience.
To utilize our pads and our liquids to start to open up who we're going to capture.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, we go back to technician again, you know, in some cases, a tall stroke, Jason was mentioning earlier about, there's a little bit of a learning curve on how to use that machine, you know, and this is much easier to pick up, and really just about anybody can do this and feel comfortable, confident you know, that there's not going to be damage. You damage a car, you damage yourself.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
Time. Then there's money out of your pocket.
Right. Right. Right.
You know, just the opposite.
But that's cool that it's meant for the home enthusiast and the pro. And to kind of, from McGuire's perspective, that's brilliant. Because your audience has grown.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
But, well, you know.
And another thing is that it's not an either-or scenario. So another beautiful thing about the MT300 is it does fit very well into what we call a multi-tool approach. So those professionals that use multiple tools on every car, you know, use the tall stroke.
Right.
We're not taking anything away
right,
from tall
right.
stroke.
Just adding to
use
it.
The tall stroke and then use the 8mm MT300.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those areas mm-hmm. that it performs well in, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah. Hmm. You're liking that, aren't you?
I do like it. Well, I like it thinking from McGuire's point of view.
Yeah.
It, you know, again, just opening up your buying audience to more people. But also, I like it from the point of view from the at-home crazy guy who's yeah. crazy about his car, that yeah. he can actually start. I had a guy that brought his car to me a couple days ago, and he bought it. It's red, bought it from a dealership, has some minor swirls in it, but he's wants them out, you yeah. know, and fine, I'll do it, which kind of is shooting me in the foot if he had this and he could do it himself. But it's cool for that guy who just likes working on his own car,
yeah.
that he can actually get a really, really good finish mm-hmm. in his home garage with this machine with not a huge significant investment.
Or a big learning curve.
Or a big learning curve, yeah. Right, right. What other main points of the machine do you guys want to talk about? Or pads?
Well, Mike, you were talking about the bearing. Do you want to get into the technical side of that?
Well, other than just that we've, through the vertical shaft that runs through the head of the tool,
okay.
there's... Historically, there's been a couple of bearings low down on that.
Okay.
You know, obviously for rotation purposes and all that kind of thing. But as, you know, we find over time as people are putting pressure down on the tool and putting some angle to it and mm-hmm. whatnot, those bearings start to wear.
Okay.
And that's, we've talked about tools getting, the sound changes over time.
Right? Yeah, vibrating mm-hmm. more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done to kind of, I think initially the thought in mind was to help save the life of those lower bearings was we had a bearing designed to fit up at the top of that shaft. And it kind of locates and isolates that shaft, and it saves the life of the lower bearings.
Okay.
But at the same time, it adds more smoothness to the experience of using the tool. So there's a whole bunch of different things that go into that that add to the ergonomics because the tool runs more smoothly. But even just looking at it sitting here, and again, there's a podcast, nobody can see it, but
right.
if you were to grab that tool... Right down at the where the trigger switch is and everything, your thumb pretty much falls right on the speed selector.
Right,
and that speed selector is not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I was gonna, I, you know, it, I didn't it, want it to be a stupid question, but I wanted to ask it. But yeah, what's kind of it seems like such a minute part of the whole machine. That's why I was gonna kind of blow it up. But since you brought it up, why not a 1, 2, 3, 4 system?
How fast are you running your tool?
3 to 4.
What is that?
Good point. I don't know. But
I run at 3.
But you know, it's
how fast are you going down the freeway?
Yeah.
I'm at a 7.
I have my RPM. It'd be like saying your RPM.
Exactly.
But that's actually funny that you bring that up because I've thought about that. You get into this, you have to translate, well, how many, you know, orbits per minute or whatever, and is my machine going at 3.5? It's like
I have a rotary buffer at home where the dial is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
And then there's a little scale
it's like,
stuck to it that says, well, 1 is it? And really, I have to read the diagram.
Right. It's just,
why isn't it just on the crazy little wheel right there?
And on a, and
I
on
want
a,
1200 RPM. Boom.
Right.
I turn it to 1200
right.
RPM. I don't have to reference a chart every time.
And to be really anal, talking about systems and efficiency and stuff, if you had to figure that out for some reason, other than wanting to know, it takes time to figure that out.
Yeah.
So that's actually
first you'd have to find where you left the chart.
Right.
You still have
it. You do have the internet, but still, it would take time.
Perfect case in point, though. We developed a DA microfiber system. We spoke specifically about
right
the microfiber cutting pad mm-hmm. with D300 was designed and engineered to run at 4,800 oscillations per minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how many people were going, well, okay, I don't have a G110 V2. What's 4,800 on my tool?
Yep.
Well, I don't know. We didn't make your tool.
Oscillations are universal. numbers and dials or not.
Right, right. You know? I think when we talked about the DA microfiber system, you guys were talking in, I'm getting all the...
Oscillations per minute.
I think RPMs. Maybe it was RPM. Yeah. And I was sitting there thinking, I wonder how many RPMs like six is or five. It's kind of one of those things that you don't think about, but you think about. So it's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up.
The DA tool category is getting broad enough now that there's many options for buyers. You have a choice of literally how many DA tools out there.
Yeah.
So comparisons between tools is now getting more prevalent. So, I mean, this actually helps somebody out by having the actual speed on the dial.
Yeah, so definitely.
You're not dealing with an arbitrary number that you have to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When it can be so, like, you know, if you're using it at speed three, air quotes, you know, and it's the machine actually works better at speed four, or that you get more defect removal at speed four, it's like it would be much easier just to say 1,200 RPM or 1,800, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
They're so arbitrary. Is three truly one more than two, and is four truly one more than three, or was there a universal or a uniform? Was it a 1,000 OPM step between two and three, and three and four, and four and five?
Good point.
Because some of those tools, when you look at what they were at, there was a 500 OPM gap from one number to the next, 1,200 from that number to the next, and back down to 900 between them.
Yeah.
I'm not that technical with it, but
I've noticed it, you know, kicking down the speed sometimes, and you're like, well, that wasn't really that much slower. Or you bump it up, and you're like, well, it doesn't seem that much faster. You know what I mean? So that's pretty technical, but it brings up an interesting point.
Is it going to make or break your ability to correct defects on a car? No. Is it convenient? Sure it is.
Yeah.
But it goes back to the user experience.
It's the whole package.
You know, and that's what I really like about it, is the user experience has all been thought about. I really like that.
And that even translates in with the three new discs that we have, the thin profile pads. We call them discs because they are so thin in profile. But historically, we've not had a cutting pad for the DA.
Thank you for bringing that up.
For a variety of reasons. The construction of that particular foam was a bit overly aggressive on a DA and things like that. So we didn't recommend our previous burgundy foam cutting pads on a DA. People used them still, and sometimes to really good effect, but for the most part, we didn't recommend it. Well, we now have a burgundy foam cutting disc. It's completely different foam than the outgoing pads were. It's the same color, but that's about it.
Right.
I know you've seen this as well, Jason. I've worked on cars with a little bit softer paints, if you will, that haze a little bit more readily. And you're rolling your eyes looking at this. And I've used that burgundy foam disc on some of these cars, and I'm hitting it with IPA to wipe it down to make sure I'm not filling anything, and I'm hitting it a second time because I'm still not believing it.
Yep.
I'm hitting it a third time, and by the time I've completely drenched this car in alcohol three or four times, I'm like, that's working. Like, it's either really, it's gonna really torch, nice. I think I finally sold myself on this.
You know what's interesting is I was having trouble on a brand new Mercedes black paint, black metallic, and I could not for the life of me get it to finish out. And then I'd go down to do a wipe down, and I'd scratch it a little more. And I'm like, I was so frustrated. Yeah. And I was trying all this stuff, and I tried the burgundy pad, and it got it perfect.
Oh, there you go.
Go figure. I know. It seems completely counterintuitive sometimes, but that pad will cut like crazy when you need it to.
Good.
And it's kind of surprising how nicely that pad can
finish. I know there's big talk on like one steps. Like, what do you guys use for your one step? To me, that was a decent one step.
Yeah.
So
that's a remarkable statement when you think about it. We have progressed in technology so far now that we can do a one step on a car with a cutting foam pad.
Yeah.
And consider it done. I mean, that's a remarkable statement right there.
And what was weird about the car I was working on, it's like, well, it seems like the paint is too soft but hard at the same time, which doesn't really make any sense to me. But then that somehow managed to cut enough but finish enough to be like the perfect
combination. Well, I can explain that because I've struggled like you have and many other detailers trying to figure out paint that's that way. Paint is a variable. You know, hardness and softness varies. Thickness varies.
Right.
But another variable that people don't even think about is how wet or dry the paint is. In other words, how much elasticity and how much fluid, because paint is a permeable membrane. It's like the skin on your body. So it has this ability to be elastic, because it makes sense. You're on a car, you're on a metal substrate that expands and contracts with temperature, right? Mm-hmm. So the paint has to go with it. Well, there are paints that scratch easy. You towel mark them.
Right.
You know, it could be that they're not necessarily soft, but they're brittle. Mm. In other words, they're really dry paint.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And you're on brittle paint. You're not on like super soft paint. So there are paints that people complain because they're like, oh, I can't get scratches out, but every time I touch the thing, I'm putting the scratches in, you know? That's a brittle paint. So, I mean, I guess the bottom line is paint is not paint. You know, you do 10 cars.
Paint is not paint.
Right.
So, I know.
But
you do 10 cars and you
they're
might,
all different.
You
might very confused look from Mr. Pennington over there.
He's like, yeah, sure. Okay.
Oh, all these years, I didn't know that. Paint is not paint.
Paint is not paint.
I've been telling everybody wrong for years.
Yeah, but when you get a paint that responds like that, you're looking and you're thinking, this isn't
this is it, man.
Paint. This is nasty, horrible substance that's thrown itself at me and fighting me every inch
of the
way.
And it's like, well, what am I going to tell the customer? Sorry, your car...
Yeah, it's up.
I can't figure your car out.
Yeah, I made
the
it.
The car's smarter than
here's
me.
Here's your money back.
Yeah. And then, you know, so how can guys use this system to increase profits in their business?
Well,
or a business doesn't even have to be a person, a business.
This particular system you're talking about, or a system?
This system.
So, so this one, how can a professional detailer increase their profits?
Or it could be any, you know.
One of them we've already talked about, and that is use the tool, use the pads, use your go-to liquids, and develop confidence in yourself that, hey, most cars, when I hit that combination, I get the result I'm looking for, and I get what I want, I get what I expect on the car. That confidence can help you make money, and it goes like this. Once you know you have something in your toolbox that works, and it works most of the time, and yeah, to Mike's point, you may need to adjust your technique or your pad choice or something, whatever. Okay, it works most of the time for me. That means that I have no need, and I'm talking about need. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to explore every other product and system out there,
right,
which takes time. Mm-hmm. And that is time you're not making money. When you're playing around with new tools and new products and new pads, you are not ringing the register.
Right.
So that's one way. We already talked about it. You can definitely make money by actually dialing in your system, getting comfortable and confident, and then rolling with it and not spend. And I'm not saying don't ever spend time looking, because technology changes and you want to find out what's out there.
But you don't want to be experimenting on customers' cars while you're trying to get paid for that car.
But some of these guys, you monitor them on a Facebook group or a detail forum.
Monitor,
and
I like that.
Every day there's like, oh, I tried this today and look at what I got. And I'm posting, 50-50 shots. And I'm like, are you making any money?
That's... Yeah.
So one way, do you think of another way?
Yeah, there's another great way where, if you're a shop that has, you're an owner and a technician, you got a few helpers that are out there, if you had tools that required a much higher skill level, that means everybody's going to have to be trained on that tool. And if that's all you used, you're going to have probably some pretty highly paid technicians that may be doing some work that possibly a dual action polisher with a standard 8mm, where you have an apprentice come in. So you're not having that guy that's getting highly paid working
that's
on the majority
yeah, that is good.
Out
good
there. One. So you can have these guys specialize in what they do, and you know that you can put the MT300 in the hands of, let's call it a novice.
Right.
He's
right.
Not going to hurt the car. And maybe you have yourself that frees you up for those super high-end, sanding and buffing, the high-end show cars. So now you got two sides of that coin that are bringing money in, and you're not overpaying. So fantastic.
To expand on that, if you've got three or four guys working for you, and you can put in their hands a tool that is
that will rival the capabilities of those tools that will quite literally cost just about double what this tool costs. Your capital investment to start off with, if you're looking at four tools, you're saving enough money to $800 buys an awful lot of pads and lookups. You know, all of those kind of commodity things that you have to deal with that you're using over and over. Because let's face it, the tool really, other than if you're mobile, your truck is going to be one of your bigger capital investments, right? And if you've got to outfit a crew of guys, you can save a ton of money just on the capital investment of it. And still, you know that they've got a tool that will rival and in certain cases, certain ways, outperform some of those more expensive tools.
You're not sacrificing the quality of the work.
It's like, well, to save money, we're going to buy some little El Cheapo tool. No, not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
That's
a great save
point.
A ton of money and still put a really, truly capable tool in their hands.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Another one I just thought of is these pads, these DA discs. They have this feature in them that they're very washable, very easy to clean.
So I heard when you guys were doing Air Force 2 or Air Force 1 or Freedom 1 or whatever whatever the name wants to be, that the pads were lasting longer and able to clean out better, which is increasing profits.
Yeah, that turns into dollars over time, you know?
Yeah, I see. That's interesting because I see some of these guys doing, and I guess it depends on the pain and how much you're correcting it and stuff, but I see them, you know, they'll use like 8 pads on one car. And I'm like, 8 pads? One car? Like that? If you're running a shop, that gets expensive.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, again, it depends on what level of correcting, how much you're getting for the car, but to me, that sounds a little excessive. Can you do a whole car with one pad? One pad, as in, can you...
A single pad?
Yeah. Not... Can you correct the whole car with the burgundy pad and then move to the black one if you need to, the yellow one, whatever. But you don't have to use 6 burgundy pads to finish out the car. Okay.
We can clean and go, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
To your point, which is saving more money because you're not having to stock up on all these pads,
Well, you brought up Freedom One,
yeah,
Jimbo, and I think I wasn't there, but Paul was doing all the cleaning.
I noticed that.
The pads,
did you not get an invite?
We're cleaning. I scheduling.
He was invited. Yes.
Yeah. So we can't all go to everything. You know. I'm actually at 4 different events tomorrow. No, but you were working on nasty old oxidized single stage paint.
Yeah.
Correct.
And as a pad would become loaded, the guys would peel it off. They'd hand it over to Paul, who was cleaning the pads.
Right.
And they basically grab one back from him and keep going. So he was rotating because there were so many people working on the plane. Right. But it was all that nasty oxidized single stage paint, and the pads were the discs were cleaning up very thoroughly with that. So. Back to your point, can you do it with one pad, with a pad washer and working on the fly?
Sure.
Yeah, because they clean out so nice.
Okay, that brings up a good point. Best way to clean the pad?
Well,
compressed air, pad washer, wet microfiber?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Washing machine? What?
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay. Well, there's best way to clean on the fly, best way to clean when you're done with the project. It's kind of two different things. So let's look at them separately.
Okay, so you want... One pad to last, whatever of the 3 pads you're using, you want one pad of each to work for that car.
So how do you clean it on the go?
How and how frequently should you be cleaning it?
Yeah, so Mike started to go down this road, but we think of cleaning pads in 2 buckets. Hey, 2 buckets. We think of mental buckets, okay? So there's, as you are working on the car, there's cleaning practices there. And then there's at the end of the car or at the end of the day, there's cleaning practices there. So you started to go down that road. You want to?
Well, I think only hit the end of the day, the end of the project. Throw them in the washer and dryer.
Okay. And dryer.
Yeah, you can go to,
low or no heat.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know when I do it at home, I throw my microfiber towels, my pads
together,
discs all together.
Okay.
And it's to Jason's point on such a low heat. That by the time they come out of the dryer, they're usually not completely
these,
done.
Okay. These specimens we have on the table here,
These
were machine wash and dry. You just took these out, right?
They may well have been the ones that went in the last load. Yeah.
So these,
I thought they were brand new.
So everybody,
I mean, now that I...
Everybody out there, you see this?
You see how clean they are?
They look very clean here.
Well, Jimbo just said he thought they were brand new.
I did.
They've been used and washed and
dried. They have been used.
Wow. Yeah. What about during the process?
So during the car, there's the pad washer device that some people use, and that's obviously a great way to clean pads. Pad cleaning brush, which is a soft nylon, not a hard or stiff nylon, because that will shred foam.
Right.
And then also compressed air is great for foam disc as well as microfiber disc. But those are the way that are best on
pretty
the
standard.
And for the mobile guys, where you might find it hard to have a pad washer or compressed air or whatever, and this isn't my recommendation, but Kevin Brown, you know, has recommended this way, which works really good if you don't have those other ways to clean your pad. So you spray on some water to the pad, and then you tightly roll up the pad into a microfiber towel, and you basically compress it like this. You know, you wring it out like you would your chamois when you're drying the car. And what it'll do is the microfiber will pull a lot of the material out of the foam, and it will now be in your towel. So you basically pulled that off the foam. And that's kind of I don't want to say a cheater, but it's a kind of what you do if you don't have these other methods.
Yeah,
works really well. You're physically pushing out the stuff from the foam into the microfiber towel.
Now, will that mess with the shape of the disc?
No. As you can see,
Everybody
out there, you see this, it flats out.
Right back to shape, right back to form. Okay. Is there anything
other than Jason not quite understanding podcasts and radio versus video?
We'll take some pictures.
Those will be up on your website later, won't they?
Yeah, great. Definitely. Okay, was there anything else that you guys wanted to cover with the machine, or do you think we covered it pretty good?
I think we beat it up pretty good.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah.
Okay, plugs. I was thinking about, you guys will probably just all say Meguiar's.
We might.
To reach me, you can just go to Meguiar's.com.
Yeah.
But say hello to my Aunt Jane. Yeah. Uncle Henry.
My nephew Ryan.
So, but I guess if people want to find you, here, I got your cell phone number right here.
Wait, no, you don't. Yeah. See?
But if people want to, or how about this? If they want to buy a machine, buy the pads, I guess go through a distributor. Look online.
I believe at this point.
Are they all stocked?
We have been shipping for a couple of weeks now. Okay. So I think the initial orders that distributors ordered, I believe everybody has that. Approach your local Meguiar's distributor or wherever you buy your Meguiar's from, whether it's online or a local store. Check them out first. But if you have questions for any of us, you know, any technical questions.
Said that a little bit better than I did.
Yeah. Feel free to contact any of us. I know Mike hangs out, or Mike Stoops hangs out on Meguiar's online, as well as you have your own Facebook page, as well as Meguiar's Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do people reach you, Mike?
I think they just call into the office here, you know, flip over the back of any one of the bottles for myself or just technical question.
Cool.
You know, it's a great 800 number. They're there 6 days a week to, you know, they know all this information that we just spoke about as well. So I'd encourage somebody to go down that path.
Yep.
For multiple reasons as well.
But by all means, for kind of general information on detailing and specifically using our products, like Jason mentioned, meguiarsonline.com, our forum, and even through there, you can find the schedule for the training classes that we offer, Saturdays and Thursday night open garage. In fact, our first one of the year is tonight.
Tonight, cool.
Daylight savings time's kicked in. We're ready to do T-Nogs again. Yeah.
And
those classes and Thursday night open garages, we will put the tool in your hands and get you comfortable with it, and you'll find out just how straightforward and easy a tool like that is to use.
Yeah, so I would say that if they're in the Southern California area or can make it here, before you buy one, come try it out.
If you're coming out to Southern California with the wife and kids to go visit Disneyland, let them go to the beach on a Saturday morning. You come down here and take the class.
Great idea.
We'll get you comfortable.
Yeah, getting into summer, that'd be a good dual-purpose trip for someone.
You'd be amazed how often that actually
happens. I bet. That's a great idea.
That would be a good dual-action
trip. Oh! Way to close out the show. Nice.
He's a poet.
That was good. All right. Well, with that, we will end the recording. That was good. I thought it was good. I thought I completely sucked. But.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Auto Detailing Podcast. Head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com to read our full show notes, blog posts, updates, and even sign up for our newsletter so you can be the first to hear about the latest and greatest all things Auto Detailing Podcast. And don't forget, if you leave us a rating and review on iTunes, it'll help us reach other auto detailers just like you, and you may even get a shout out at the top of a future episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.